finishes off in style. A magnificent strike into the crowd. India lift the World Cup after 28 years.
November 2015, Adelaide. The first day-night test match between Australia and New Zealand, and test cricket stepped into a new era. In the last 3 years, we have had 11 day-night test matches at 6 different venues across the world. Adelaide has hosted 3, Brisbane and Dubai have hosted 2 day-night test matches. Well, we have had 1 women's day-night test match as well. We've had day-night test matches at Port Elizabeth, Auckland, Bridgetown, Birmingham. And we have seen Australia, England, Pakistan, West Indies, South Africa, New Zealand, Sri Lanka, and even Zimbabwe have played day-night test cricket. But hey, world cricket revolves around Indian cricket. And until the men in blue step onto a lit ground with the pink ball in hand, day-night test cricket is not going to be in fashion. It is all set to change on Friday, though, when India take on Bangladesh, the first pink ball test in India, the first pink ball test match for Bangladesh as well. It will be at the historic Eden Gardens, the 12th day-night test match overall. History in the making. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Hotspot. We are here to turn things pink, talk about India and Bangladesh, and of course, the pink test at Eden Gardens. As always, I am Chetan Narula, sports journalist and broadcaster, your host, and my co-host, former Indian cricketer and broadcaster, Deep Das Gupta, all the way from Kolkata. We've had a longish break. We apologize for that because Deep was traveling, and more importantly, he caught the travel bug. Hope you're doing well now, Deep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you mentioned, the travel bug, and also wasn't expecting the test match to get over that early. But I'm finally good and recovered and raring to go. I mean, what a huge, huge occasion, obviously for India and Bangladesh, but also for world cricket, as you mentioned a while ago. I mean, listen, if this is successful, you know, in the subcontinent, India and all the dew and everything else, God, I mean, this could well be the future of test match cricket.
Well, we will talk about the future of Test match cricket with the pink ball in detail. But right now, it is time to welcome our special guest for this episode. He is touring India along with the Bangladesh team. And let me just tell you, he is the most prominent cricket journalist from that country. For the first time on Hotspot, we welcome ESPN Cricinfo's Mohammed Issam. Welcome, Issam. And I hope you're enjoying your time in India. I saw your pictures in Indore, had some good food, had a good cricket match as well.
Thank you, Chetan, for inviting me to your show. Thank you to Deep as well. Yeah, so far it's been good for a journalist, but I don't think it's been great for a Bangladeshi cricketer so far.
Well, cricket, as we know, is a funny game. Things can change. Deep, you wanted to say something there?
Nah, I'm with Issam on that. I mean, listen, I thought this was a better Bangladeshi side that I've seen before. Unfortunately, didn't prove it that way. But yeah, I mean, come on, Issam, did you have poha and jalebi in at Indore?
Of course, I've been to Saraha Bazaar.
Oh, yes.
That's the place to be, Issam, yes. In Calcutta, maybe Deep can take you out or can recommend you some good places. Deep,
I'm sure Issam's traveled enough to Calcutta. I just have a feeling he might know better places than I do.
Is that true, Issam? Is that possibly true?
No, that's not possible, Deep. Come on.
Well, turning our attention back to cricket, of course, this has been a long tour for Bangladesh by now. The T20 series, as Deep pointed out, they are a better side. They gave a very good account of themselves. It finished 2-1 after Bangladesh took a 1-0 lead, and they really competed well in that T20 series. Things perhaps nosedived a bit in the test series. So let's just dive straight into this episode and talk all things about what has happened on this tour so far. The prelude to this tour, so much happened with Bangladesh cricket and, of course, the pink ball test. Well, the first segment of our show today, and we'll take a look back at how this tour has been for Bangladesh, how it has been for the Indian side. Of course, you remember Virat Kohli was unavailable for the T20 series, so Bangladesh taking a 1-0 lead, and then India coming back to win 2-1. A closely fought contest, I thought. Isam, I'll come first to you. You know, a lot going on with Bangladesh cricket before this tour. We had Shakib Ul Hasan that whole episode, two new captains, you had the strike by the senior players. Just give us a lowdown about how the preparation was. Were you surprised that the tour went ahead at all?
No, I wasn't surprised that the tour went ahead. It would have gone ahead because the strike had stopped on the third day, which was about October the 23rd. What really affected the Bangladesh team was the confusion surrounding Shakib Ul Hasan's absence from the camp from October the 25th. You could sense that even the players had no idea what was going on. Very few people in Bangladesh cricket honestly knew, couldn't honestly say that they knew what was going on. And it went on about 4 or 5 days. And Shakib appeared one day at the camp, as far as I can remember. And he was just as a sort of a, just showed up for the camp and train. It looked very, very confusing. Just imagine, without knowing what was about to happen, and then he signed a big deal with that telco. The whole confusion, the president was blasting him on interviews, on TV, on newspaper interviews. And then suddenly it all came down to, well, he was banned. So what was really surprising was them winning the first 20, how it went for them in the previous week.
Played really well, won that match by 7 wickets in Delhi. Deep, bringing you here for a short comment on the T20 series. You, of course, did broadcast work during that series. Tell us, I mean, India fought back without Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma leading the side really well. But standout performances by Deepak Chahar. I thought the Indian bowling, there were some elements missing. But apart from that, the Indian bowling really coming together well, showing us that we need leg spin with Yuzvendra Chahal. But Deepak Chahar, I think, is a standout performer.
Yes, and very important as well, because if you look at Indian white ball bowlers, and I'm talking about seamers here, and especially T20, India is struggling there. I mean, you have Bumrah and Bhuvi, and both of them are injured as of now. You can't possibly name a third seamer in that bowling lineup who would just walk into the playing 11. So there is a struggle as far as seam bowling is concerned, and Deepak Chahar playing the way he did, not just in this series, mind you, he's been around for the last 3-4 series now, and he's done really, really well in all the series. I mean, be it West Indies, be it South Africa, and now in Bangladesh. So I think the biggest takeaway from that series, as far as India is concerned, is obviously Deepak Chahar. And also, you mentioned Yuzvendra Chahal, and also Rohit's captaincy in the third T20. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Because India, I mean, at one point in time, when Naeem, I mean, another, I think, a big positive as far as Bangladesh is concerned, Naeem was brilliant. He was batting like a champion. And that, and along with him, Mithun, that partnership. And then the way Rohit kind of handled his five bowlers. Now, there wasn't a sixth bowler. The fifth bowler was Shivam Dubey, who's really not known for his bowling prowess. And also included amongst those five bowlers was Khalil, who had given more than 80 runs in the previous two T20s. So, I mean, the way he handled his bowlers in that last T20 was phenomenal.
In Hotspot, in the previous episodes, we have touched upon how India's white ball bowling is perhaps, especially the pace department, is perhaps lacking a bit. So it was good to see Deepak Chahar do well. And it's good that you touched upon that Naeem and Mithun partnership. I thought that was brilliant to watch. Isam, the way these two came up, especially Mohammad Naeem, what a find. And we also have Afif Hussain. He's an all-rounder, bats in the lower order, but what a useful spinner. These two players really stood out for Bangladesh at a time when they needed players to stand up.
It was quite surprising to see Mohammad Naeem in the team, but with Tamim Iqbal out due to his wife's pregnancy, you know, no one really knew who this guy was. That's the fun story, that I called up three of his coaches at the under-19 level, just asked them where he's from. They couldn't say. They said, not really sure where he's from, but he's a very quiet guy. He's been scoring runs. He has been scoring a lot of runs in one-day cricket in domestic competitions. Not T20 or first-class cricket, but just completely one-day. He's like a one-day batsman in the Dhaka Premier League. I think Deep knows what the Dhaka Premier League is like. It's a club competition. It's the highest form of cricket in Bangladesh. So, him, Naeem, is a big find. Afif has been in the radar for a while. He even took a BPL hat trick. Even took Chris Gayle's wicket once. So we knew a bit about him, but 9 was like a complete surprise package, and very good on them. They did quite well. I also would like to mention the fact that Naeem comes from a really sort of a cricketing backwater, about 130 kilometers west of Dhaka. You don't hear about a lot of cricketers coming from that area. So kudos to him for bringing his area into the spotlight.
Absolutely. I think we'll be seeing a lot more of Mohammad Naeem in Bangladeshi colors in the years to come. And, you know, to come to India at a time like this and score those runs and almost win the series for Bangladesh, I thought that was really making an impact or making a statement. And like you said, kudos to him that he comes from that background. Very quiet guy, as you said. Another question here, Issam. I mean, two new captains, two different formats. So you have two different captains. You have Mahmudullah. And I think he did well with his, he did well with his leadership in the T20 series. Mominul Haq, perhaps a touch tougher assignment because, come on, let's be honest, India in India, the toughest test assignment there is at the moment.
Definitely. The toughest job in the world right now is to captain a team in India, coming to India. But I felt that he was a little overwhelmed in the off the field stuff. He came to the press conference, wasn't really sure of what he wanted to tell the media. But as far as I've heard from the team, he has tremendous respect among most cricketers. And he's also lucky that Mushfiqur Rahim and Mahmudullah are with him, the two senior guys, the only remaining senior guys in this test team. And as far as I can see that he should be a long-term prospect, but for that he has to score runs and lead the team better in Kolkata and then going forward in the World Test Championship.
I'm with Issam on that. He looks like a good captain and everything else. And it's not an easy job. But you know what? The approach in the first test, now we're talking about the test matches, I thought was predominantly a little negative. Okay, winning the toss, batting first, I thought was a brave move. And I'm not going to criticize the captain for that. Because if you technically look at it, it was only the first session, right? And first session, Bangladesh did okay. 60-odd for 3. Where Bangladesh lost the first test was the second session where they, lost Mahmudullah. He was struggling in that innings. In fact, he struggled right through the whole test match. Even Mominul himself, I mean, letting that one go, shouldering arms. I was a little disappointed in the approach, which was negative. I mean, you just pick 4 bowlers. End of the day, if you're planning to win a test match, if you're in there to win it, you're going to pick bowlers to pick 20 wickets. And when I looked at that 11, I was like, listen, I mean, that looked like a little defensive playing 11 where you said, you know what, let's try and survive here. Is that the feeling you got as well, Issam and Chetan?
Interesting point there, Deep, about the playing 11 composition and the bowling lineup. But I want to differ here with you because I thought, picking or choosing to bat first after the toss was a negative move. Because with this Indian attack and this Indian batting lineup, if you give them an opportunity and get bowled out for a subpar total, which Bangladesh did, and yes, I have the benefit of hindsight here because Bangladesh got bowled out for 150, but then that puts them on the back foot straight away. The only way you can win in India or make an impression in Test cricket in India is to put this Indian side under pressure. And in that first test, I thought bowling first, maybe attacking the top order, that could have been the way to go about it. Something like South Africa did in Ranchi, get those top 3 or 4 wickets, put the Indian batting lineup under pressure. So I was really surprised that Bangladesh batted first. Issam, throwing that question to you, what Deep said, were you surprised that, first of all, we've had a bit of a difference of opinion here. Were you surprised that Bangladesh batted first? And secondly, of course, the composition of that bowling attack.
Yeah, the composition of that bowling attack said that they were defensive, and then when they batted first, it said that they were going to be attacking. That's the thing. I don't disagree with any one of you. I thought it was a very bold decision to bat first, as Deepak Gupta said here. But unfortunately for you and me, the captain came out and said it was the wrong decision. Now, whether he said that because he didn't like the question or whether he did feel it was the wrong decision, I think Ravichandra Ashwin came out and said it was a bold decision as well. So I just get the feeling on that day, the people I had spoken to throughout the game, everyone thought that, wow, what a wonderful decision. A team comes to India, really weak team, number 9 in the world, without 2 of their best players, and they're batting first. At the same time, Chetan, you're also right. I mean, they should have understood they could have gone for bowling first since they had won the toss. And there was some movement there, but honestly, they probably had absolutely no confidence in that bowling lineup. It was just a very defensive mindset with a fresh new captain.
But I'll just say one thing here. I mean, I'm not saying that was a good move or a bad move. All I'm saying is it was a brave one. And you know what? This is my take on this. I mean, a decision, a captain's decision is only as good as the players make it out to be. There are times when you bowl first and the first session you don't pick any wickets. That doesn't mean the decision of the captain was wrong. It's just that they didn't use it. Now, if you look at those three wickets, how they fell, I mean, they could have easily gone on to score even after losing three wickets in the first session. I thought Bangladesh could have easily gone and scored a 250, 270. You know, you never know because the pitch eased out. And that's where I believe we make a huge deal out of what a captain's decision is. End of the day, it boils down to the players, what they make it out to be.
There was always going to be a tough battle in terms of, or an uphill battle, I should say. It was always going to be an uphill battle in terms of Bangladesh fighting to survive, especially when you've been bowled out for 150. Issam, you mentioned that they did not have that confidence in that bowling attack. And I think I saw one of your statistics on Facebook, or was it on Twitter? I don't know. But this pace attack, Bangladesh Pacers or Bangladesh pace attack, they haven't taken a 5-wicket haul for some time in Test cricket, have they? Am I wrong there or am I right?
No. It's 6.5 years. They're still going on. That's the thing with fast bowling in Bangladesh. One or two of them have come up over the years, and then they have just faded away very fast. And the other problem is, since the last 3-4 years, they've only gone for one pace bowler in the home Test match, and that is replicated in the first class scene. So, Chetan, you can just imagine every first class team picks one or maximum two fast bowlers, even on good conditions for fast bowlers. So, when you don't have that habit of fast bowlers, this Abu Jayed, he is lucky that he plays for a small team called Select. They don't have a lot of bowlers, so he gets to bowl a lot of overs, and he's the leading bowler. He's by far one of the highest wicket takers among fast. You have two guys, Ibadat, I don't know what he does with the new ball or old ball. He's just picked out of a pace hunt, like hunt for the fastest bowler in Bangladesh. He's clocked about 133. Just imagine. There's no inspiration to be a fast bowler in Bangladesh. It's obviously, there's Mashrafi, there's Mustafi, they're very good one-day bowlers. But for Test cricket or for longer version cricket, it's way, way behind.
Yeah, and I understand where Issam is coming from, and we had that issue. We had that issue here in India as well for the longest time, where obviously we kept producing fast bowlers, but this lot, a lot of credit of this lot that India has right now, you know, 4-5 quality red ball fast bowlers and a few more on the bench is predominantly to a reason that the board had, or a policy that the board started off around 5-6 years ago, where it was like kind of made mandatory to have grass on the pitch, on first class pitches. That's where obviously the result is quite evident. You have more number of fast bowlers now as compared to spinners. India doesn't have too many spinners, especially red ball spinners, but you have enough fast bowlers is because of the surfaces. So you encourage the next generation to bowl fast. And as Issam mentioned, I mean, listen, if first class surfaces are barren, you're not going to encourage anyone to bowl fast there. As he mentioned, you'll have one bowler per team, and that's not good enough. And that's where I think there are things to learn out of this series, and maybe at times what India has done in its domestic structure, because end of the day, that is what your pipeline is. I mean, that's your grassroots level.
Absolutely. I think we also saw a ruling from Bangladesh Cricket Board that they wanted a leg spinner in each of the T20 teams that are playing in whatever level of Bangladesh cricket, which was really surprising, because you can't really mandate a bowling attack composition in terms of domestic cricket or your T20 league cricket or your franchisee cricket. But Deep, here we also have to talk about the Indian pace attack, because yes, maybe spinners are not getting through. I mean, you look at somebody like Kuldeep Yadav not getting an opportunity. But that Indian pace attack, I mean, you think of the past Indian captains, and if they are watching, if Saurabh Ganguly is watching, Rahul Dravid is watching, forget them. If Sachin Tendulkar is watching, Azharuddin is watching, Sunil Gavaskar or Kapil Dev, who had one pacer each, and before them they did not even have any single pacers. Virat Kohli has five pacers at his disposal. Pick and choose whomever he wants, and they will get you 20 wickets. It's been a symphony of pace bowling, Deep.
But Chetan, this is by design. It's not by chance, it's just by coincidence
that all of them have come together. But I'm saying that it does inspire a bit of jealousy. It does inspire a bit of awe that Indian cricket has never had these many riches in terms of fast bowling. And like I said, it's a symphony of fast bowling. The batsmen, whether it's Bangladesh or South Africa, or you go to Johannesburg, or you go to Australia, or you go to England, the batsmen are struggling against the pace attack.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know what, you can only compare this to maybe Australia. Apart from Australia, I don't see any other pace attack as potent as India's at this point in time, because of not just the numbers, as you mentioned, but also what they do. I mean, they're very different from each other, what they do and what they bring to the table. You know, I mean, we're looking at three of them right now. Bumrah is going to be fit soon. So you add Bumrah there, and mind you, there are, like I mentioned, there are a couple of really good bowlers on the bench. People like Navdeep Saini, you know, they're good, good red bar bowlers. I tell you what, if Navdeep Saini was born 20 years ago, he would have been playing Test match cricket now for India.
Yeah,
he's really that good. You know, people like Siraj. So obviously, there's a lot of stuff also happening behind the scenes. For example, you know, the way this team management has handled Shami. We all see, listen, we knew about Shami's talent, what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, right? The first time you saw Shami, you're like, oh, wow, what a talent. But the way they've handled this talent, his injury issues, he's temperamental, we know that. You know, just to the way they've handled him for the last 2-3 years is phenomenal. Someone like Ishan Sharma, listen, you look at his career. Before 2017, he was a very average bowler. Post 2017, he's a different bowler altogether. It's like reincarnation. Same with Umesh Yadav. Umesh Yadav under Mahendra Singh Dhoni has toured Australia, I believe, twice. Right? So look at him now. So obviously there's a lot of good things which are happening. You know, we at times, especially in our country, we keep being a little too critical about the support staff. But there are a lot of good stuff happening here as well.
Absolutely. I think we've touched upon Mohammad Shami in one of our previous episodes where he became the second innings Shami after quitting chicken biryani. I wonder what Umesh Yadav has quit. But Deep, I mean, you look at Umesh Yadav. I was wondering, I mean, is it possible for a bowler, because he's practicing and playing with one particular ball, to probably master the movement? Because what I see of Umesh Yadav now is somebody who's really developed his skill in terms of bowling with the SG ball. He's not as consistent when he goes overseas playing with the Duke's ball or the Kookaburra in terms of controlling the ball, because he has raw pace. This is one pacer who has, like you said, he's been touring Australia since 2011. He's not cut down on his pace, but the movement or controlling the movement, we are seeing a very different Umesh now with the SG ball as compared to the Umesh we saw in England last year, or in Australia or South Africa, where he was perhaps not as consistent with his line and length with the red Kookaburra or the Duke's ball. Is it possible for a bowler to control a bit more to a particular type of ball?
Yes, it is. As you mentioned, yes, definitely, because you're just bowling one particular brand of ball. I mean, all of them are very different. And also the fact, I think there is a lot of security amongst these fast bowlers. Yes, they are competing, but I think it is, I think it's evident to me at least that they've kind of, you know, the roles are defined. In terms of Umesh, I don't see Umesh playing too many away series or too many away test matches, unless it's really, really important or you're struggling as far as the others are concerned. Same, I would like to believe for someone like Shami would be all surface and all conditions. Ishant, between Ishant, Bumrah and Shami, if they require two only, then I think Ishant would be a third choice. So I think the roles are defined here, you know, and that's what I really like as far as, you know, this team management handling the fast bowlers and also this whole rotation thing. And, you know, the biggest advantage or the takeaway as far as fast bowling is Ishan Sharma post 2017. And I quickly make this point because I don't think this has been made before. This is my theory. 2017 auction IPL, he doesn't get, he goes unsold, right? He doesn't get a franchise. He goes to England, plays county cricket. that's where I believe everything, I mean, that summer, I think a lot of things changed, because I thought he started focusing on his red ball cricket. He realized, you know, maybe white ball isn't, because he was dropped as far as India was concerned in white ball cricket as well before that. So I think Ishant's reincarnation, or Ishant 2.0, I think a lot of credit should go to him and also to the team management for making him secured and comfortable in what they wanted him to do, not necessarily what he wanted.
Well, it all is really coming together for India in terms of test cricket at the moment. And of course, now it's time for them to take another leap. We've discussed so far how the T20 series went, how Bangladesh cricket built up to this tour. It was a bit of a turmoil. We also talked about the first test match, which, well, India dominated within 3 days. Now it's time to move on to the next segment of this episode and talk in a little more detail about all the pink color that is adorning the city of joy at the moment. Lot of pink in Kolkata. It is time to talk about the second test match, the first ever day-night test match between India and Bangladesh. Well, this is the pink test segment, and the city of joy, Kolkata, is all dressed up. I'm told it's all colored up in pink. There's special ways to promote the day-night test match, and it doesn't really need that much promotion, because what I'm hearing is the first 3 days of the second test match have all been sold out. It's a historic occasion, which, of course, well, there has been one historic occasion for between India and Bangladesh in the past. It was the start of this millennium when India toured Bangladesh, played that first test match in Dhaka, which was the arrival of Bangladesh in test cricket. And now, this time around, it's Bangladesh's turn to come to India and take part in this historic occasion as we usher in day-night test cricket in Indian cricket history. Deep, first coming to you, how pink is Kolkata at the moment?
Oh, as pink as it can get. To be honest, I was just talking to someone this afternoon, and I was like, it seems like we are having Durga Puja twice in a year. We just had Durga Puja last month, and it feels the same again now, because the buzz is unbelievable. And it's so heartening, because we've seen buzz around cricket before, but it was predominantly T20, IPL, or one day for that matter, but never this much of buzz for test cricket. So it's heartening and it's brilliant. I was there at the ground, and I could feel it, you know, I could feel it in the air, everyone. But the worst part about it, I'm sorry I'm taking a little longer, but the worst part about it is, you know, tickets. Everywhere you go, people like, okay, sir, do you have tickets? Do you have tickets? I'm like, listen, I've stopped taking calls and I've stopped going to any place which I don't have to be.
Well, that's the downside of being a popular figure in Calcutta, an ex-cricketer in Calcutta. Isam, how are you enjoying Kolkata with all its pink dressing up? How excited are you to be part of this this occasion? You know, day-night test match, first day-night test match doesn't come along too often in any cricket nation's history.
Yeah, it's an exciting event, and I can see that already there is a bit of buzz about this test match in Kolkata. I know it's between the best test team in the world and probably one of the lower ranked teams. But the whole idea of India and Bangladesh playing a test in Kolkata, maybe in many people's mind, this was like a dream many decades ago when Bangladesh was separated from Pakistan and then became a separate country and started to grow up in cricket. This is a purely Bengali test match, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, true.
So we should term it the Bengali test match. It's going to be a celebration, isn't it? I mean, and of course it goes to show, like I mentioned before at the top of the segment, first 3 days properly sold out. Deep Das Gupta being hassled for tickets. Isam, tell us how did the BCCI manage to convince Bangladesh Cricket Board to say yes to this test match? Because let's be honest, Bangladesh haven't really played a pink test match before. There's not been a lot of practice. There's been no practice match as such. They've only had net sessions with the pink ball. So how easy or tough was it to convince Bangladesh to play this match?
Chetan, Bangladesh has only ever played one pink ball match. That was 6 years ago, and none of these players are in the team. First of all,
right.
They have refused New Zealand twice. They have refused England once to play test matches at home as well. So I'm just setting it up. It's getting to a point where you'll understand who convinced them.
So Saurav Ganguly is putting out the magic, yeah.
Yes. Mr. Saurav Ganguly has done something special because, first of all, he has a huge following in Bangladesh. The Bangladesh Cricket Board really respects him as a cricketer. And that connection comes also from the fact that he was the captain in Bangladesh's inaugural test, also his first test. So many things coming together. And the moment he became the BCCI president, I would say there was a muted celebration in the cricket board as well, that they have, in inverted commas, our man in the hot seat. But really, it was probably Saurav Ganguly who made sure that he passed on the right message to the BCB. Look, it was very last minute as well. It wasn't as if planned for months. This series was planned a long time ago, but this test wasn't supposed to be a pinball test. But the moment he passed on that message, BCB straight away spoke to all the players. And from the players, it wasn't negative. It was mostly positive. The coach said, look, this is going to be a first time for India. This is going to be a first time for us. So there is going to be some sort of balance in this contest where there's something new in the picture. So we might as well take a chance. We've never beaten India in a test match before. So why not we try once?
Right. That was an interesting way to look at it. Deep, I'm just going to ask you this here. You know, this Pink Test match has been brought about to do something different for Test cricket to do with the attendances. Yes, it's sold out. Very good to hear that. And it'll be amazing to see it. And I'm just looking at this picture from the first day-night Test match between Australia and New Zealand, November 27, 2015, in today's Hindustan Times. And of course, it was sold out as well. So it's good for Test cricket, but there's a big difference between, you know, attending a match in Adelaide and attending a match in Eden Gardens. There's no doubt that, yes, day-night Test cricket will help attendances, but a lot more needs to be done to improve the fans viewing at cricket matches, whether it's India or it's Bangladesh.
Listen, we've spoken about this on this platform before as well. And listen, straight away, one thing is good that you don't have to kind of sit out there without a shade out there in the sun, right? That's straight away leaving aside the first couple of hours of a test match. So that is out. But you know what? There has been an honest effort here made by BCCI, CAB to make things better. I'm not saying it's going to be overnight. You're going to get rid of all the issues that discourages people to come to the ground. But I think it's an honest effort. And that's where you also need to congratulate the Bangladesh Cricket Board, the Bangladesh players, the Indian players to agree to this. And you know what you mentioned about Issam's, the point that Issam made, very interesting. I think it's a very, very important point. Because if the ball is going to seam around, if there is extra help for the fast bowlers, I think it kind of, you know, helps the Bangladesh side a little more than the Indian. Shami would have moved the ball irrespective of it was day and night or a day. But now you have Abu Jaed, you have Al-Amin if he plays, or Mustafizur if he plays, or Ibadat who plays. They will start getting help off the surface as well. Now, if you look back 2-3 years before this lot of fast bowlers was available to the captain, Indian captain, every time India won a test abroad, were on green tops, right? So that's where I think, you know, Issam has got a very, very valid point. And I agree with Issam that, you know, every time I see a Turner or a green top here in India, which predominantly are Turners, I straight away say, you know, that's an advantage for the opposition. I mean, on a Turner, Ashwin will turn, Jadeja will turn, but the opposition bowlers will also get more help. So I think that's a very important point. I hope the Bangladesh team management or the players are also thinking like that.
Issam, tell us about, we'll talk a little more in terms of the preparation of the two teams. Tell us how have Bangladesh prepared for this pink ball test? Yes, the three-day test match in Indore, and I heard that both sides were practicing. Before coming into this series, did Bangladesh practice a bit more? You said that the only pink ball game they played was 6 years ago. So how has their preparation been?
No, not at all. No preparation at all before coming to this tour. They had no idea about pink ball cricket before getting to indoor test match where someone started to bowl with the pink ball in between the sessions. In the last 2 days in Indore, I attended those sessions. I saw it from the stands. They spent a long time with the pink ball. They had three different nets in the Holkar Stadium. One of them was just for the two of the coaching staff to chat balls at them with the sidearm so that they could sight the ball. All 11 players, they sighted the ball right till the end. Like, even when the ball passed them, they left the ball a lot. Then we got to speak to Mehdi Hassan yesterday, and he said that he felt it moves, obviously. It's a little flat. It moved around laterally, and he said that it might be okay for the spin as well. They can use it for extra bounce and all. But he felt that this is going to be a little bit challenging, but they're all very excited with the color of the ball. Another additional information here is that one information I have from within the camp is that sighting during twilight is going to be very tricky. They've all felt it. I think we felt it at the ground as well. Apparently, when both sides practiced in indoor during that same period, the day before yesterday, it was that period that was everyone was a little bit apprehensive, it felt, while taking catches and all, especially the Bangladesh camp that I had seen. It wasn't used during that, especially when the ball was flying on the stadium level. It was still indoor, but you know, you could then imagine what might happen in Kolkata. But if it went up, like it was a skier or something, it has a sort of a consistent background, then I think it might be easier. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I've heard that is the only concern that we have, batting in the final.
That's the reaction every time I've spoken to the players, the Indian players as well, regarding the pink ball. Even I covered the first day-night Dulip Trophy we had here in India way back in 2013-14, especially that twilight period. Now, I was there at the ground today at Eden Gardens from around 4 p.m. in the afternoon till 6:30. Couple of things I wanted to check. One was the twilight, as everyone's been talking about it. And secondly is the dew factor. Now, let's start with the twilight as we're talking about it. In Calcutta, the funny thing is the twilight period is pretty short. Okay, the sun goes down real quick and fast. So within 15 minutes, the sun is down. Right. So the twilight period, which is predominantly a little more on the western part of the country or even central in the east, it's not really that much. So I was just checking around 4:45, it was fine. It was like nice and bright because the sun was out. And by the time the lights came up, it was roughly another 45 minutes to an hour. Right, so it's not like the whole session, the whole second session would be affected by twilight. So I just have a feeling, yes, it will be affected, but wouldn't be for a huge period of time. That's my take on the twilight thing, because I was there at the ground today checking it.
And what do you think about the dew factor?
Now, dew is huge. I mean, in the subcontinent, the main reason for not having a day and night over the last so many years is because of the dew, because it straight away takes out the spinner. But this ball is different. You know, I don't know whether both of you have did get the opportunity to have a look at it. Now, this pink ball is basically, again, it's more orangish than pink, to be honest. It is made almost like the red ball is made. It's hand-stitched. The issue with the pink ball before this was it used to be made out of white leather and then spray painted pink. So they had to put extra layers of lacquer to protect the pinkness of the ball. Right? But this one, the leather is dyed pink before it is stitched. So just like the red ball, this pink ball is also dyed first pink color and then it is stitched into like normally you would do with a red ball. The other difference with this pink ball is, the seams a lot more prominent and proud, and it's the thread used are thicker to grip the ball better, because that's the other thing which happens when there is dew and the ball gets wet, it's difficult to grip it, like it becomes a bar of soap. But I mean, that's from the ball's perspective. I don't think that it has enough or so much of lacquer that it'll affect in a drastic way. The other thing, obviously, they're putting a lot of chemicals and all that, right? They've started the chemical treatment. I was there, as I mentioned, and they've started using those chemicals on the ground. There'll be ropes used between every break or even during a drinks break and all that. So they are trying their best. But having said that, dew will have its effect and we can't stop it because, you know, in the subcontinent, you play day and night, it will be affected.
I'm just looking at the statistics from the last 11 test matches and talking just about the men's test matches here. There have been two occasions where spinners have taken wickets in double figures. And I'm talking about both test matches in Dubai, Pakistan versus West Indies, 22 wickets for the spinners, 24 wickets for the spinners in Sri Lanka versus Pakistan, again in Dubai. Apart from that, the spinners haven't breached the 10-figure mark in a day-night test match. So you're looking at, in 11 tests, 256 wickets for pacers, and I'm talking about all over the world, and only 96 wickets for spinners. Isam, we talked about Bangladesh's bowling composition in the first test match. Do you think it will have an impact on perhaps maybe playing an extra pacer, relying a little more on the spin all-rounders? Dew will take prominence at Kolkata. We have seen it in the past. Dew will take prominence. So maybe it will change Bangladesh's strategy, bowling strategy at least.
For sure, they're playing three fast bowlers. I have information that that is how they're going to go for it. And I think Mehdi will be the only spinner that they'll pick because he has a bit of batting. So that the tail isn't too long. If you pick three fast bowlers, it's basically three number 11s. So they'll have Mehdi at 8 and then probably they'll change it around. They'll have Abu Jayed, Al-Amin and Mustafiz. I don't think Ibadat will play. I wouldn't be very surprised if they picked all four fast bowlers, but that's not how Bangladesh cricket works. So three fast bowlers is all we'll get for this game.
Deep, we talked about Bangladesh's preparation. We talked about their team composition. Ajinkya Rahane, in the build-up to the series, he was practicing at the NCA. He said that, you know, the pink ball is moving a lot more. He needs to play later. So you're saying that maybe the batsmen at all, for all purposes, they need to play later. So what about India's preparation? They have also, you know, for all practical purposes, few days in NCA, and you're talking about just the 2-3 batsmen there, Cheteshwar Pujara, Mayank Agarwal, and Ajinkya Rahane. Virat Kohli was totally off at that time. And then the net sessions in Indore. Yes, they have been practicing pre-match, post-match. Yes, two more days before the test match, pink ball, pink ball, pink ball. But that's not really match practice, is it?
Listen, I mean, we've been used to, as cricketers, used to playing the white and the red. So every time you see at the ground, I mean, that's what Isam mentioned as well. At the ground, if you see something white moving towards you or a red moving towards you, you react. Now you have to train your mind that if there's something pink, you've got to be attentive. So that's where it's more training your mind rather than anything else. And also, to be fair, the Indians who practiced at the NCA, they weren't practicing with the actual match ball.
Okay.
Because the actual match ball, as far as I know, was only made available at the indoor test, during the indoor test rather. Because before that, everything else was like prototypes that were made available to the Indian team at the NCA. So the actual match balls, the actual pink or rather orange balls were made available only during the indoor test for both the teams. So that's the scene. And yeah, I mean, listen, like I said, you trained from childhood, you're trained white, red. But now I guess they need to retrain their minds and start looking at pink as well.
I don't think there will be any changes in India's team selection. I expect the same 11 to play. They have the three pacers they want to pick.
Yeah, they don't have a fourth pacer anyways in the squad. The Indian squad doesn't have a fourth pacer.
And yeah, I mean, there's no reason to bring in extra spinner because Ashwin and Jadeja provide that all-round balance. It's been interesting to see Jadeja bat ahead of Ridhiman Saha in every test match since the World Cup.
You know, Chetan, the only interesting part will be whether they go in with five bowling options or four and add Hanuma Vihari as an extra batsman there. Extra, I mean, that's the only change that may happen. But apart from that, there's no
another possible change. Another possible change, Deep, is that they could have Saha bat ahead of Jadeja this time around because he's playing at his home ground. But apart from that, like you said, that maybe, yes, there might not be any changes. Mushfiqur Rahim batting at number five. A bit low for him?
A bit low for him, but they have this mindset where they want these two to bat at 5 and 6. Him and Mahmudullah, just to make sure that the tail doesn't have to bat with a lot of, you know, their tail doesn't just wear off. So basically, they want one of them to stay back. They don't trust Litton that much. But Litton has batted well in this game. I thought he didn't bat badly in the second innings. But again, Litton is being Litton, is playing too many shots. But I think with him not keeping wickets now, Mushfiq will bat at four. And the rest will be a little... That's going to be the one shot.
I remember an incident from 2014 that was in Melbourne, just a couple of days before MS Dhoni announced his shock test retirement. There were a few Australian cricketers, not in the first team, the few on the extras. They were playing in the middle and testing out the pink ball. That was the first time. And at that time, day-night test cricket had not started. And Dhoni, on his way to the press conference, went there and he played a bit with them. And it was a test run because there were TV cameras. They were trying to sight the ball. At that time, the experimentation for sighting the ball was still going on. MS Dhoni came into the press conference. I cheekily, while he was sitting down, I asked him how was the experience. And he said he could not see the ball. Well, we hope that the players, both India and Bangladesh, they can sight the ball. Final comments from you, gentlemen. First of all, Deep, coming to you. What do you think this test match is going to do for Indian test cricket?
Just want to say this. This is not perfect. I mean, if you're going to ask a player, they'll always be like, you know what, I need preparation. That's how we are trained to think like. There will never be enough preparation for pink ball cricket, right? So you've got to push the players a bit. And I'm glad that the players have agreed, both sides, to play with this pink ball. Again, this is not perfect, but you've got to start it somewhere. And it's a good start. It's a good beginning. And I'm looking forward to it. And I hope this is first of many day and night test matches that we'll get to experience here in India.
Isam, just one final question to you here. Bangladesh, of course, graciously, like you said, the Ganguly factor, accepting to play this test match. What do Bangladesh take out of this tour? It's been a brave tour for them, missing Shakib, missing senior players. What do they take out of this tour? What do they take out of this pink test match?
For me, pink test match is a way of opening your mind to new possibilities. Bangladesh cricket for a long time has been very apprehensive of trying new things. So this is great. This is really a good opportunity for them to try out certain things at the three-man pace bowling combination, maybe one less batsman. You know, they always play with seven batsmen. That's another thing on the cricketing side. Of the cricketing side, I would say that this is a huge missed opportunity. This was their biggest tour in this decade. Look, last time they toured, one of the big three was obviously India in Hyderabad for just one test. But they don't tour big nations. They don't tour England and Australia and India. These are the three big nations we always talk about. So this was their greatest opportunity to finish off the decade on a good note. But all this chaos. But they won a T20. I would say that was one look to the future. Amin Islam, the leg spinner. We have Muhammad Naeem and Afif all doing well. But then this test match, they must make a point here that they're not also runs. They're not just pushovers. They must make sure that they at least push India somehow. And they have the biggest chance.
Well, we wish both the sides all the best of luck going into this new era of test cricket, not only for the Indian side, but also for Bangladesh cricket. We hope the pink ball brings back the joy to test cricket. We all love test cricket. Yes, we love the T20s and the ODIs, but the real joy of being a cricket fan, we've all grown up watching it. Well, one of us has grown up playing it as well. So we hope that it brings, the pink ball brings joy back to test cricket, not only in India, but also in Bangladesh. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thanks for listening in. We will be back soon with a new episode after the second test match between India and Bangladesh. And also there is the West Indies tour to look up to, a lot of cricket this home season. We would like to thank Mohammed Isam for taking time out on this tour. We wish him a great stay in Kolkata. Have great fun watching the pink test match. Watch history in the making. And perhaps the match will not finish so early, but just in case it does, have a great time walking around the city as well. In the meantime, do leave your feedback and comments. Share the episode on social media. Reach out to us on social media as well. We're now on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, JioSaavn. So you can subscribe to this podcast hotspot there as well. Until next week, it's goodbye.
finishes off in style. A magnificent strike into the crowd. India lift the World Cup after 28 years.